I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. Joining us now, State Representative Chris Taylor from Madison. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, just terrific. Let me ask you, on a state level, how you think Governor Evers is doing so far as governor, and are there disagreements? Is the caucus unified behind him on every issue? Are there differences? How are things going between Democrats in the legislature and the governor?
Oh, I think they're going very, very well. I worked very closely with the governor on the Joint Finance Committee. Let me say, Sly, it is such a relief to have a Democratic governor who's not afraid to veto some really, really horrible policies. I got to say, during the reign of terror of the Republican domination, every time I stepped foot in this building, I was wondering what she's going to drop next, who's going to be hurt by the next policy. And to have a governor who I think we can count on to veto and veto liberally some of the really harmful bad policies that I see in this legislature, it's just a huge relief. I feel like I can breathe again, frankly. We've been holding our breath for 8 years, just trying to fight as hard as we can against the attack on working people. So, you know, I really personally like the governor a lot. The thing that I find so refreshing about him is he is a normal person. He's not a political robot like Scott Walker, who's just a robot. I mean, who wants a political robot as governor?
Well, I think a lot of people do. I mean, I think there are a lot
of... Well, I don't. I think it's horrible.
I agree. There are far too many people who do. What did you make of former Majority Leader Chuck Quayle's criticism of Governor Evers not vetoing the entire budget?
Yeah, I just disagree with former Senator Quayle, who I really do have, you know, a lot of respect for. He's a very smart man. But I just disagree. I think this governor is a very progressive guy, but he's a pragmatist and he wants to get stuff done. And he wanted to get more money to our K-12 public schools. Look, I got two kids in public school. I see what's gone on in the last 8 years, and it's scary because the investments have not been made in our children. So he was able to get more money, about $87 million more, almost $600 million for our public schools. I thought that was good. Transportation, it wasn't fixed. We still need to fix it. My Republican colleagues just kind of kicked the can again, but they did give more money for local roads. Again, Governor Evers was able to use his veto to also get some transit in there, which we desperately need in our state. So I think he's a pragmatist at the end of the day. I think, you know, I don't know that he saw that he would get a better deal with the Republican legislators, who are not willing, by the way, to negotiate. They don't want to talk to us. And we try. Let me tell you, I was on the Joint Finance Committee. I love to negotiate. I'd love to sit around a table and hammer out things. There is no willingness by the Republican leaders to do that, none. And it's a big mistake on their part, in my opinion, and it's a real shame because the people of the state lose at the end of the day because they're unwilling to do that.
Well, John Nichols, when we talked about this, sort of used the Socratic method to describe why it would have been stupid to veto the whole budget. And one of the points he brought up, and I hate to bring back bad memories of law school for you using the Socratic method here. But yeah. One of the points he brought up was that had Evers vetoed the budget, that we'd still be living under Scott Walker's budget.
Yeah, we would go back to base budgeting. So just so everybody knows, that means this current budget continues to go on. And this current, you know, now we're beyond that. We're in a new fiscal year. But that's the reality, is we would be. And you know what? We also wouldn't have gotten a $1 billion investment for our UW system. I mean, literally, Sly, We had students, young people, come to our budget hearings all around the state, basically begging us to fix the buildings that they're in. These are UW students. They told us they have rats, bats, leaks in their buildings. They can't learn in the UW system buildings on their campuses because they're in disrepair. They're falling apart. So we were able to also get $1 billion for UW to make the investments that they desperately need. Look, is it everything I wanted in a budget? No, it's not. We didn't get Medicaid expansion. We did the capital. The Republicans were willing to do the capital budget for the UW, but they really screwed them once again, to be blunt. They didn't make the investment in the classrooms that we need for the UW, one of the biggest job creators in the state of Wisconsin. So it was not a perfect budget, and I was a very vocal opponent of what the Republicans were doing. But at the end of the day, you got to take the best deal that you think you can get. And, you know, I think that was the governor's thinking on it, and I don't disagree with him.
Do you think that Governor Evers is on solid ground when it comes to the line item veto and what he did with education funding? I noticed the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is now going to file suit on that.
Yeah, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is a joke. They're a partisan hack law firm.
You are going to upset Rick Essenberg. Chris, you're going to...
I don't care. You know, he's not willing. There's been so many constitutional abuses by Voss, Speaker Voss. So many constitutional abuses. I called Rick Eisenberg when I thought I was being discriminated against by the speaker. And, you know, was he willing to do anything about the fact that I felt my constitutional rights were being violated? No. Has he said anything about...
Wait a minute. You're telling me Rick Essenberg didn't help you?
He did not help me. Oh, it's Eisen, isn't it?
Essenberg.
Essenberg. Yeah. Essenberg. Sorry, yeah. I'm thinking of Mark Eisen, our local reporter. No, he had no interest in that. What about my colleague, Representative Anderson, who Speaker Voss, and he's violating civil rights laws. I don't care what anybody says. Speaker Voss in denying my colleague, Representative Anderson, any accommodation. Representative Anderson is in a wheelchair. Speaker Voss denied giving him the ability to call in, not for all meetings, not all hearings, but for some. Because sometimes he just cannot, due to his disability, he cannot get. These hearings are sometimes scheduled very last minute. Speaker Voss won't give him any accommodation. It's outrageous. Where is Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty? You don't see him anywhere. Where were they for 8 years when Scott Walker was doing very similar types of vetoes? Nowhere. They are partisan. They're a political hack, illegitimate.
Well, they're an arm of the Bradley Foundation.
They're an arm of the Bradley Foundation. Who is in the Bradley Foundation has been one of the biggest funders of the far right in the state of Wisconsin. So they take their marching orders from their far-right donors. That's nothing new, by the way, Sly. Mm-hmm. Robin Voss also, all he does is appease his big-money donors. That's why we actually can't get some of the policies that people support passed, because his big corporate donors, his rich friends, don't like it. And so it's nothing new. It's what I see, unfortunately, here in this building. That's why we need to get rid of these people and send them home packing. But it's, you know, they just have no legitimacy.
How is it that we live in a state that refuses to acknowledge the reality of legalizing marijuana, and yet there's so little regulation on vaping? And I'm sure you saw the story at Children's Hospital in Milwaukee,
right?
The Children's Hospital of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, and the rash of teenagers getting sick from vaping.
Yep.
Why is marijuana still a crime and vaping, which is doing real damage to young people, laissez-faire?
Yeah, well, we're going to be working on the vaping issue, but it's...
I'm not a nanny stater, but this is kind of scary.
Oh, I know. Hey, look, I've been trying to get medical marijuana passed since I got here 8 years ago. You know, the polling is off the charts.
Oklahoma, Arkansas, Utah.
Every state that surrounds us. Are you kidding?
I know, but I'm talking about right-wing Republican states have passed.
Florida. I mean, you can go on and on. Florida, North Dakota. I mean, it's unbelievable. Hopefully we're going to have a bipartisan medical marijuana bill. Is it going to move? Probably not, because there are people in this building who don't listen to the people of the state. There are legislators in this building who do not care what their own constituents say. And that's the problem with this capital, is we have legislators who pick their voters. You know, it all starts, in my opinion, it starts with gerrymandering, but then it's exacerbated by them, the Republicans, gutting all of our campaign finance laws to allow the avalanche of corporate cash to come into our elections. And then, you know, the third trifecta is the voter ID stuff that they did. And so this is, you know, when you rig the system, and they've rigged the system against actual people, you stop listening to actual people. And you can see that in so many policies, marijuana being one of them.
And then we have a kangaroo court, Supreme Court.
Oh, gosh, don't even get me started with that. Yeah, that is, it's, you know, and we're going to, it will, the ramifications of this state Supreme Court are going to be felt potentially for decades.
What do you think happened this spring?
You know, I think maybe our voters got a little comfortable. I think there was an assumption that Judge Neubauer was going to win. And the work, the ground game work, did not happen, whereas the Republicans used their national arm, and the national arm, and they do this, come in at the last second, spend a little money, try to motivate Trump voters to turn out when they typically don't in the spring elections, and that tipped it. And we have to be much more astute. You know, the right figured out a long time ago how important these judicial races are, and the left is still catching up. We still don't quite understand how important these races are. But this state Supreme Court potentially is going to determine whether the rigged gerrymandering can continue on and on. And, you know, it's scary, honestly. I very much fear what we're going to see with them, you know, basically putting their blessing on. We could get even worse maps than we have now. So this next election for the state Supreme Court, you know, we have got to elect somebody who actually cares about individual rights and not corporate domination.
I hope that we fight on the turf that kind of unifies the state. I think one mistake that was made by some of the outside groups is that, you know, I understand that Hagedorn's comments were just absolutely abhorrent, but I think maybe talking about abortion and gay rights probably isn't always the ticket to getting the statewide coalition that progressives need. Economics, bread and butter economics. And I know that's tougher. I know that's tougher in a court race, but you know, it is clear that Hagedorn was able to turn that back around and fire up Christian evangelicals to come out and vote in places like the Fox Valley.
Absolutely. I don't necessarily agree that reproductive health care doesn't turn people out. People should be scared because we have a criminal abortion ban that is going to go into effect of Roe versus Wade. I actually think these issues can be used effectively. They were not, however, because you have to translate them into the fairness argument, that the courts are a place where you should get a fair shot. You should have a chance to defend your basic rights. And so what I kind of thought, and you know, this is like, you know, this is after the game is lost, and you kind of go back and you have, everybody has their own opinions. But what I think is you've got to translate. You don't necessarily run on, you know, I think you can, and I think you can use those issues very, very effectively. But how they are used effectively is saying everyone deserves a fair shot. Everyone deserves to have a chance in front of the court, not some rigged court that's bought and paid for by, you know, again, the special interests.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll pick it up from there. Chris Taylor with us, state representative from Madison. That's liesoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733.
We're back at slysoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and also Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. Joining us again, State Representative Chris Taylor. You briefly mentioned the maps. Now, right now, Republicans are being a little coy about this, but we're certainly hearing rumors that they're going to try to pass maps after the census that will essentially bypass the governor. Now, Are they denying this now? Are they?
No, they're not. So they're being tricky, and this is how they operate. They're not saying we're not going to do that. We're not going to do maps for resolution, which potentially could stop the governor from vetoing really gerrymandered, again, unfair maps. They're not saying they're not going to do it. They're saying we haven't talked about it. Those are two very different things.
I think they have talked
two
about
very
it.
Different things. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think that. If you believe that, I have a bridge to nowhere I'm going to sell you, right?
I mean Bruce Murphy from Bruce Murphy from Urban Milwaukee didn't pull that out of thin air.
No. They're going to try it, and that's why people cannot vote for Republican legislators this time around in 2020. And I don't care what part of the state you live in. If you care about fair maps, you cannot vote for Republican legislators because they're going to do the exact same thing. In fact, I think it's going to be worse than the maps we got, which were by some experts' account, were the worst, most gerrymandered maps in 40 years of any state. So that was the Wisconsin Assembly. The worst, according to some experts who are very, very smart, they know a lot more than I do about mathematical formulas and everything.
Well, they've refined the technology, sure, to get this. And it worked exactly as planned.
Absolutely. Yeah. It worked exactly as planned. And you know what? Now there's no threat of litigation because we have a horrible U.S. Supreme Court, another court, you know,
kangaroo court.
Another court where you cannot depend on them to care about things like voting and, you know, protecting people's most fundamental rights. That's willing to say it was, and that was an outrage. Willing to say, we don't do politics. Yeah, if you believe that, I mean, come on.
They do politics
in every decision they make, starting with what cases they take. They do politics. It's a joke for them to say that. So now we don't have that potential. We have no threat of litigation unless it's along a protected line, unless we can make a case that this is results in a desperate impact on race or another protected class, gender. And so we don't have the protection of a potential lawsuit. So I am just appealing to voters, wherever you are, if I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, if you believe that you should choose your policymakers, that you should actually choose your legislators, you cannot vote for a Republican legislator in 2020. You just can't. Until we get this map thing sorted out, until we get, and what we really need, Sly, is a constitutional amendment to our state constitution to put a nonpartisan process in our state constitution. That's what we really need. But until we can get that or a piece of legislation passed saying we're going to take it out of, to the extent possible, I mean, the legislator does have to vote on maps at some point, but that an independent body is going to come up with the maps, people really, if they care about this issue, they cannot vote for Republicans.
Republicans already have an advantage in the state because of the way the population is concentrated, and it's a growing problem. It doesn't explain everything that happened in Wisconsin, but because of the way politics is nationalized, and you don't just see it in Wisconsin, you see it all over the place, that the way voters are distributed, there are a lot of people that have left parts of the state that were once swing areas and moved to Madison or Milwaukee or out of state. How do Democrats go back to places like Sheboygan and Manitowoc and Rhinelander, Merrill, Wausau, and make a case that cuts through the national politics and the sort of tribalism that's going on?
Well, first, the first thing that we have to do is work with people on the ground who are from these communities and really start listening. Stop talking, start listening. And run on more local issues that are important to communities. So we have to listen better. We have to engage people in those communities. I think we got to hire organizers from those communities who are trusted already and have relationships in the community. So I think that's the first step. Secondly, we have to make the case much stronger that the Democrats are the party for working people. And that is the truth. But we have to go in and not just assume. Obviously, people aren't believing that, particularly with when you look at some of the Trump supporters. But I do think there's a national narrative from the Democrats that we can also ride on. And I think you hear it being made so effectively by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And that is, this rigged economy is not the result of, it's not the result of immigration. It's the result of massive corporate tax giveaways and the accumulation of wealth in the wealthiest elite.
And 40 years of desecrating labor rights.
That plays into it, though, right? That's what happened. That's why middle-income wages have not, particularly here in the state of Wisconsin, our wage growth has been clustered at the top, in the top 1%. In general, our wage growth over the last 8 years has been about half the national average. So we know working families are hurting. And then you add on top of that the desecration of unions. And we know that where you have a strong union presence, all boats rise. Wages of working people, whether you're in the private or public sector, go up. So labor rights is a huge piece of this economic disparity that we see. And so we have to make sure at the state level, we are pointing out we've had the same dynamic. We've had 8 years of massive tax giveaways, so much so that under current policy passed by the Republicans, you have 16 multimillionaires who make $30 million each. They're going to get $36 million in a tax giveaway called the Manufacturers and Agricultural Tax Giveaway. That's the kind of policy we see from Republicans. It's the same thing we've seen at the national level. So we need to be talking about pocketbook issues. We need to be talking about issues that hit people in the wallet, because that's where I think working people are struggling so much. They're struggling to stay in the middle class. They're struggling to get in the middle class.
And you look at up north, and you look at the inner city of Milwaukee, and even though the tribalism, politicians play these two groups of people off each other, they're struggling with some of the same problems, and that is hope because there's no jobs.
Absolutely.
That are well paying.
That are well paying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They have far more in common. The people struggling in the inner city of Milwaukee have far more in common with the rural poverty that you see. You know, I've knocked on a lot of rural doors. They have far more in common than difference. And that's what we have to talk about. We're for all working people. We're for elevating the economic status. We want an economy that works for everybody, not just those at the top. And we have to say that, and we have to make our case. But we also have to listen. And we also have to look locally at what are the other issues that are impacting people's day-to-day lives.
So the other day, the governor was on the Van Jones Show on CNN. I mentioned this to you when I saw you the other day. And Van Jones thinks that it's a problem for Democrats to be running on Medicare for All in 2020. He agrees with it, but he thinks it's a bad strategy. So he asked Governor Evers about, the large number of people that work in the healthcare industry on the insurance side. And Evers said, and I'm reading off a transcript here, I think so. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's nationally we have 2 million people who work in the insurance industry. Do we want to lose 2 million votes right off the bat? Now, I know there are a lot of big insurance companies in the state of Wisconsin. Where do you come down when it comes to Medicare for All versus expanding the Affordable Care Act?
Well, look, I think everybody should have the opportunity to receive Medicare. I think we should open it up, and there's a bill that we have. It's a Danny Reamer bill to let people be part of our Medicaid system. I don't understand. I just think it makes a lot of sense. So, I think the debate we're really hearing now is, well, do you let people who like their private insurance stay on it? And unions, you hear unions have, where they can, not here anymore, of course, because the Republicans have gutted all of our collective bargaining laws, but you hear, and this is part of the debate in the Democratic debates, that should people be able to stay on their private health insurance? And I actually don't have a problem with that. If people want to stay on their private health insurance, I don't have an issue with that, but I want Medicaid to be open.
Well, if I had been Bernie Sanders, what I would have said to Tim Ryan the other day, and Tim Ryan, congressman from Youngstown, Ohio, was attacking Bernie on Medicare for All, is, yeah, I understand the United Auto Workers like their health care. How do the workers that worked at the Lordstown plant that just closed down, how do they like their health care coverage, right?
How do they like it? And that's why I think we got to open up Medicaid. I mean, it's, I think
the notion of tying health care to employment, as we see changes in the workforce and the gig economy, and you've seen these statistics about the large number of jobs that are going to be automated. One of the candidates made that point last night. Isn't it kind of going to become an antiquated notion of tying healthcare to employment?
Look, I do think we can phase out that system over time. I think that's probably a more pragmatic approach, is to come up with a system where everyone can buy into a Medicare for All plan. They can participate in it. Maybe we have some kind of sliding scale for that. And the people who currently have their private insurance, they can continue on if they like it. But you phase it out over time. You kind of grandfather them in and phase it out over time. I don't think we got to get stuck on exactly how it happens. I think the good news and the thing that I'm really proud about is Democrats are talking about having a system that covers everybody, that we build a healthcare system.
Well, Republicans are busy trying to take healthcare away.
Well, and that's exactly right. I mean, we've been fighting tooth and nail, and even from their own constituents. That's what's so unbelievable to me. When I went through and looked at, well, how would John Nygaard, how would Robin Voss benefit? How would their constituents benefit by expanding Medicaid? And Robin Voss's district stood to get, I think it was $90 million. In the next biennium, if we had expanded Medicaid and covered thousands of more people in Racine County. And he still wouldn't do it. They rather people die, because people are going to die. They don't have access to health care. We know people have access to affordable health care have a decrease in their morbidity. And they turn their backs on those people. Those are not legislators working for people, for your average person.
I don't know how you spend any time with him or deal with him, because I find him to be so unpleasant, not only bad on policy, but I find his personality to be so unpleasant, which gets to me to my final question. What is the state of State Senator Fred Risser and whether he will run for re-election? That's coming up next year.
Right. Yeah, and he hasn't made an announcement about what he's doing. He is my senator. He's a lovely person. We've worked together a lot. If he were to retire, I certainly want to run for the Senate. I've been in the Assembly now 8 years, and I feel like I have a lot to offer. I feel like we're in such a different political time right now, Sly. In my opinion, every single person who's sitting in a Dane County seat, Milwaukee County seat, these seats that are very Democratic, they're pretty safe seats, we all have an obligation to help others get elected. We have an obligation to be raising money for other people. We have an obligation to be out there knocking doors for people. That is my history in the Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked very, very hard to do that. So I think it's critical that voters in our community right here make sure that when they elect somebody, that person, it's not just out for themselves. You know, politics is not a unilateral sport. It's a group sport. It takes collaboration. So I really do feel like I have a lot to bring, and, you know, I'm a hard worker to the Senate, so I definitely want to, you know, position myself, so I'm ready to go.
Well, and you'll have my support. Now, and I'll say this, we don't agree on every issue, but what's great about you, all right, and I didn't bring you on just to flatter you today, but you sit down okay. and you listen to me. You don't have to. I'm actually not one of your constituents right now. I live in Sheila Stubbs' district, but you sit down and listen, which a lot of people don't do.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, look, I learn a lot. I mean, you know, there's a lot to learn in this job, but I've learned. That's how you learn. You're going to make mistakes. I've made mistakes, but I'm trying to improve, and you do that. You know, you're always trying to get better and do bolder things and do better policies. And that comes about by really listening to your constituents and trying to be very in sync with them and trying to do the right thing, you know, trying to get things done that are really going to help people. So I really appreciate that, what you say. And I just really love talking to people. I love hearing from people. What are their ideas? And what are their opinions? And that's what makes one of the things that makes this job a really, really fun job.
State Representative Chris Taylor, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.